Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
The Joanna Reardon Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Hello and welcome back to the Joanna Reardon Podcast with me, Joanna Reardon. This week, we've got Ginny Murphy, Leinster, Ireland rugby player and pep talk partner. This week, she talks about her life as a rugby player, how she got into rugby and everything else between and how much she enjoys sport. Tune in and enjoy. Ginny, how's it going?
Hey, how are you?
Long time no see.
Yeah, it's been a while.
First time I met you, I felt a little bit kind of creepy about it. I was a bit fangirly because I'd watched you play rugby and I was like, I kind of want to be her friend. And then you came over and I was like, oh, don't tell her you want to be her friend in public. It was so embarrassing. But
and then before I met you, you had a Facebook friend request in the bag already. And then
it was me creepily stalking you. Yeah. It's like my it's like the way celebrities have like the fake page. That's me.
Nice.
But anyways, you said we were talking earlier and you were saying you're going to go to Goal. I was just interested to hear what your like ambassadorship is with them and your role and things like that.
Myself, Roisin Upton with the Irish hockey team and Sinead Ahern from the Dublin football team we're heading out on Sunday. It's a short enough trip out to Malawi, so we're 24 hours flying, 3 days there and 24 hours back.
Oh, no jet lag.
but we're seeing a few different things. So I guess one of the main things is their goal this year is gender inequality. So we're meeting a lot of women with different programs in Goal. We're also seeing some basically sustainable farming. Malawi is a country that's very affected by climate change, even though they've contributed nothing. Yeah. To the actual climate change itself, they're just suffering so drought a lot of the time. So we're visiting areas like that as well, and then some youth programs too we're going to visit. So it's going to be jam-packed, but I'm just really looking forward to it now.
Cool. Are you going to bring like rugby balls and hockey sticks and the like?
I'm going to try and sneak in a rugby ball and see if we get the ball thrown around there.
It's going to be like one of those pictures in 10 years time. It'll be like little Johnny who met Ginny is now it's like a superstar in Malawi. You're like, oh, that was me.
Fingers crossed. We'll see. I might have to bring a Kildare jersey as well.
No pressure.
Get the Brady's Ham out there too.
God, that would be as a Cork person, I'm kind of looking at you eyebrow raising going.
Yeah, I know, I can see.
It's, aren't they suffering enough out there?
Significant eyebrow raise. Thank you. That is so harsh.
No, they'd be fine in Malawi. They'd love the jersey, yeah. To be guys. You've played for Ireland since nearly 2012, but like the start of your career was really funny, like when you got signed up and you hit your first tackle and the ref made you apologise. What happened there? It's kind of weird in rugby, you're forced to apologise for doing something you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I was living over in London and had started playing with Teddington Antlers and then got kind of there was a premiership team nearby, Richmond, and I went to join them, and from there their coach at the time was the Scottish national coach. I must have got seen playing because I was playing second row and loose and in the flanks, and I got a call up to go across to Ireland to play against Ireland just as part of Irish Exiles. It kind of worked out that way. We got absolutely hockeyed in Johnstown House. I was playing a fullback. It was maybe my second or third game playing in the back, so I was pretty clueless. And I tackled one of the girls, Nikki Cockey, hit her, and I can't remember now if it was high or not, but she went out over the sideline and the ref kind of went up to me, made me apologise to her while she was on the ground, and the head coach of Ireland at the time, Philip Doyle, Goose, was livid, absolutely livid, and I thought that it was me.
He
was angry at her. She got up fine, I think, he was pretty pissed off, and that was fine. I kind of was like, oh God, was worried about it. She didn't come back on playing, and I was a bit like, oh, is she okay? And I was like, well, that's my chances of ever playing for Ireland down the Swanee. And then it turns out later that he was just really mad at the ref for, you know, me doing my job and doing it well. So that was my first meeting with Goose, the terrifying, lovely man. So yeah, it was. And then when I did get a call up after that, I got a call up to the Irish squad after that training game, and obviously I got roomed with Nikki Cockey, which was great as well. So yeah,
and it was good banter.
Yeah.
But you didn't you were dabbling in rugby, but you weren't really kind of into it properly until you were like 19. You were playing kind of other sports, weren't you? Like your GA, and you had other sports behind you. Do you think that helped you in like your rugby career, or do you think like, oh, I just wanted to try everything? Were you like one of those hyperactive children where your mom was like, go?
I was really easy to buy presents for. It was just like, get her a football or football boots or a Man United jersey and she will be happy. I'll be happy out. So no, I just didn't know there was a women's rugby team. Genuinely, I would watch a little bit of it but not have a vague understanding of the rules. But Gaelic and soccer, like Gaelic and football, would be the main sports that I would have played. And then when I went across to the UK to study, I was playing, you know, with the Gaelic team and the soccer team over there, and saw the college team train, and they were training in the mornings at something like 7 or 8 o'clock before lectures, and then they were training at night time as well, like a few days. So it wasn't loads, but I was like, oh, I've got a bit of time, I think it would help my Gaelic.
Sounds intense though.
Yeah, it looked difficult, it looked physically demanding, and they were probably the parts of Gaelic that I would have been good at. So I was like, oh, I'll give this a crack. It'll help my Gaelic football. It'll help my soccer. And the first training session I went to, I fell in love with it. I absolutely loved it. I was like, oh, I'm able to absolutely whack someone. I'm able to hand off somebody. I'm able to do all these things that are normally like, well, get me arrested or get me a card on the pitch. And from then, I think from that session, I was like, oh, this is something that I want to get good at. Now, I still hadn't a clue, and things snowballed really quickly for me in terms of, you know, playing college, then playing with the local Teddington team, yeah. And then from there moving to Richmond, and then getting a chance at playing with Ireland. So, but it was pretty good. I'm like, there was just, you didn't know the sports, the women's rugby team was here. The first time I knew that there was an Irish women's rugby team, there was a World Cup in 2010 in England.
Yeah.
I randomly went to the third, fourth playoff, I think it was Australia, France, and I saw a little green tracksuits. And I was like, oh, there's a women's team. And I was firstly angry that I didn't know that it even existed. And I was like, okay. But then didn't really think anything of it. I don't think at the time I was even playing rugby. I was just like, oh, that'd be a cool thing. But never in my wildest dream did I think that I'd get to wear that tracksuit.
It's kind of cool though. Like, I mean, you literally went from the sideline 2 years prior to actually getting called up to literally standing with like your, you know, you probably didn't know them at that time in 2010, but like your near heroes, you know, the Fiona Coughlins and all them in the world. Were you any bit starstruck when the phone call came, or were you like, oh, just take it head on, just tunnel vision kind of vibes?
I definitely was. I hadn't a clue, because you get your opportunity if you're Irish qualified but you live abroad. You're Irish qualified, but you get whittled down. And what they used to do is they used to fly you over, and you'd play maybe one game against like Leinster or Munster, but in this case it was you're playing against Ireland in a warm-up game before the Six Nations. So they'd already picked their extended squad, and at the time when I was in the UK, after Christmas they wanted me to fly back, train, and then train in December. And I was like, I'm too broke to pay for flights back across from Ireland. I haven't been home in ages, and I'm like, this is my first like year playing or whatever, there's no chance I'm going to get in it. So I was kind of like, okay, well, no, I'll give it a crack next year, but it's not possible. So then went back to the UK in January. They had picked the kind of people from that are Irish qualified that were like, okay, I think you're good enough to maybe get a shot. They were flown over for the Six Nations camps at the weekends, and I was just training with the Exiles, and then that's how we came, kind of played against Ireland. So when I went back to the UK, I was working in a bar, and this was after I kind of had to apologize for tackling someone, and I got a phone call from the manager at the time, Gemma Crowley, who is one of the most amazing managers you could ever come across. And she gave me a call, and I initially thought, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to pay medical bills for whatever. It was panic straight away.
Brings your mother.
Yeah.
Help.
And she said, we'd like you to come back next weekend for the next round of the training camp. And I dropped some old lady's gin and tonic and was absolutely delighted. It was one of the best phone calls I ever got.
You didn't expect it at all? Like, no.
No, hadn't a clue. And yeah, that's kind of... that's where it started.
Like, that you're still weird athlete that's like, it was in my blood.
I don't know about that now, but I was lucky enough that when I came into the squad, it was filled with some amazing, like, experienced players that very much took me under their wing. And it wasn't, there was a lot of competition and drive, but there was no, she's here to steal my place. And yeah, it was like,
I remember the USA, like the soccer team, I remember Hope Solo saying it was a ponytail posse. And I remember that like made me laugh. And she was like, I never felt welcome. They never cared. You know, if you weren't part of the crew, like that was it, game over. But it's much different for our rugby. I kind of feel it's different in Irish sport in general because we all know each other. When you went in, it was fine. Like,
yeah, I think they kind of knew I was a bit clueless as well. And at the time they had like players like, you know, Grace Davitt, and he was one of the most underrated players in Irish women's rugby. The likes of Lynn Cantwell, who were in the centres, and they kind of were spent a lot of extra time helping me with, you know, learning the moves and being extremely patient. And kind of in that environment, you're going to thrive.
Yeah.
I think when athletes, so if you're happy off the pitch and you're comfortable, you know, making mistakes and trying new things, then you'll perform better on the pitch. If you have that fear going into training, you just don't perform well, or you underperform and kind of play within yourself. And it kind of, and that kind of atmosphere can spread. So yeah, it was a really solid mix of, you know, experience and then the likes of myself and Ashley Baxter and a few others that were just like, oh, we're just happy to be here. And it worked out all right.
Yeah, no, I mean, 2013 then like came along, you won your first championship. Like, that must have been massive. I was only thinking about it last night, and I was actually saying it to one of my brothers, and we were saying, yeah, they were actually the first women's team, if you think about it, that came, bar Katie Taylor, but you came nationally onto the scene. Like, we all felt we were rooting for you. Was that, did you feel that in 2013? Like, you went to probably into that championship, were you expecting to win? Or were you just like, look, let's go
like,
for it.
You see, that was my first championship where I was kind of starting a bit more. I got my first start against Wales in that very first game. And you're kind of not really, I know it's such a cliche thing, but you're not really thinking about the end of the championship at the time. It was just like, Wales away is, you just don't look past that.
Yeah.
And then that was, we got a good win. Jill Burke got like a very important try towards the end of the game, and then from there we were like, okay, that was pretty good, let's move on from there. And we had, I think we had England next, or so, like, I think we had England next. Mm-hmm. And that's, we'd never beaten them before. Like, the first time that the Ireland women played against England, there's like old photographs up online, and we're like double XL jerseys that we're absolutely drowning in, and the score was something like 80 something nil. And then there's other couple of years down the line, it's, you know, 70-5, but we're celebrating, the Irish team are celebrating because they got a try against England.
Yeah.
So it's come such a long way. And yeah, to get that, to beat England for the first time, but even looking back and having the scoreline, they scored nothing against us. That nil is still one of my favourite score lines. We didn't let them in after them winning the Grand Slam.
They're some of the big dogs, like, in the Northern Hemisphere, like, you know, take Australia, New Zealand out of it.
They are the big dog in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Now more so than ever, pretty much professional team. English Premiership is like, it's their competition. Mm-hmm. When it comes to domestic rugby. Yeah, they've set the bar. And then, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere, you like the likes of Australia are getting more test games. New Zealand are obviously, they're always up there.
Yeah.
And they play some stunning rugby. So yeah, I think it's good that we get to play the likes of England, and then France are also a team to watch too. So it's like, I think we just need to, the gap is widening, so we kind of need to cop on to ourselves a bit.
When ye won then the Triple Crown, I think it was against Scotland, were ye, like, was that expected? Like, were ye kind of finished with the English game saying, this is something big here, like, something cool could happen? Or were ye just like, next game at a time, let's hope for the best?
I think that we'd beaten Scotland the year before, and they were the underdogs going into this game. But again, you always have, like, I don't think you ever go into any game, no matter who you're playing against, being full sure that you're going to win or full sure that, like, you're going to lose. There's always, you always go in confident and like, listen, if we are able to implement and play how we can play, we can do something. But again, we didn't look past.
Yeah.
We didn't look past it. I think in the change rooms, there was an extra buzz, an extra, like, little bit of energy. I know Mazzy Riley took caffeine gums for the first time, which was a mistake. She was absolutely wired. And then you've got the likes of Malloy and others who are coffee fiends, so would be able to take like 3 or 4 and would have no effect. And Maz doesn't drink coffee, so she was definitely a lot more pumped than normal. But I think it's more, yeah, it was definitely the gums rather than the actual occasion itself.
Then you obviously won, like, you know, the triple crown, and like, were you, like, did you, were you lifting that trophy kind of surprised with yourselves that you made such kind of strides, or were you like always kind of well aware that this was the potential if you managed to get the whole group to kind of together?
Yeah, like I'd imagine the more experienced girls, the older crew, would have had a better idea of like what we were capable of doing. I think because I was just in the squad for the second year, I didn't really realize how good we had it and what we were kind of capable of doing. It was just, and I think that works as well with a lot of teams. When you have that good mix, there's no, oh, you're not like, you're not used to losing.
There was no pressure on you anyways.
There was nothing. We just kind of were like, let's do what we do with training. And I think that mix always works well with teams. You don't have a fear because like we didn't have an experience of, you know, playing against, you know, big scary teams and losing. It was just like, listen, you get to wear an Irish jersey and you get to play a sport that you love, like rip it up.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, when you get a bit older, you start to like maybe think a little bit more. And I think that's good too. But I think that balance is always works well.
My favourite was that like you officially tick like the bucket list thing when you won the Grand Slam on Patrick's Day. Now, admittedly, it was like a 6-3 game, which you're looking going, oh, that doesn't sound too great. But like no matter what the circumstance is, like that's a big moment. Like, I mean, you ticked every Irish sports person, like what they want to do is win a championship on Patrick's Day. I assume it was massive and women's sport wasn't really that big at the time. But I remember you made the news and I remember being like, oh, that's cool. You know, just kind of walking through. Did you know how big you could possibly get from there? Like, were you aware of what was going on the outside, that you were kind of building a little bandwagon?
Like a little bit. We like there was people were flying to our games. It was in Paravaggio, so it was in the middle of nowhere in Italy. Absolutely rotten weather. The pitch was horrendous. And then there was like an RTE news van there. We're like, what are they doing? Like, oh, they're broadcasting the game. Now, albeit it probably wasn't the finest spectacle of women's rugby going. But yeah, it was just a really good day. Like I got injured in the France game before. So myself and Ashley Baxter were sitting on the bench drinking guapa. We thought it was water, but it was a strong Italian liqueur. Which was, you know, not the...
We've all mixed that up.
Yeah. But that was so nerve-wracking to watch. But it was such a... Oh, when that final whistle blew, the relief and then kind of looking around. And you could tell from, like, you're looking at Joy Neville and Fiona Coughlin and the amount of... And the girls before them as well. There was ex-players there in the stands and that had... They had given us this opportunity. They mightn't have been on the pitch at the time, but the reason that we got our hands on those medals was because of all the crap that they had done before. Yeah. So we were kind of just basically on their shoulders, and just lucky enough that I have a medal in my back pocket and a very good day.
Doing that like thing on Megamind where he's like, I love you, random citizen. And all the ex-players like, you know, handing them the trophy bit by bit. Like,
oh, that's nice. Yeah, pretty much. No. Oh,
I could have gone full Regina George. It was like, you broke off bits of the trophy and we're like, this is for you.
This is, yeah.
No, you didn't do that.
Didn't do that. No, we kept to ourselves. We were like, thanks very much, but we're keeping this.
Yeah, yeah. Bye. Yeah. 2014, it was like an even bigger year. Like, I mean, you think Irish women's rugby couldn't, you know, Grand Slams are like really good, but like the World Cup was massive and you'll always have the tie line that you were the first team to beat New Zealand in a World Cup context, like take Munster out of it, like you're the first national team. Were you confident going into that World Cup? Like you just won the Grand Slam, so you were probably well buzzed. Like, did you know the further lengths that you'd go as a team?
Yeah.
Was 2014 different? Were you feeling a bit more?
Again, my first World Cup, didn't know what I should or shouldn't be afraid of. And then when you see other players around you being confident and excited, that's so infectious. So we were coming into it. Everyone was saying it's the group of death. We had USA, who were ranked above us, the Kiwis, who hadn't been beaten in 16 years, and Kazakhstan, who were, you know, a very physical and abrasive team. So we kind of were like, okay, this is what it is. Look what we've done last year. And then we had really good training leading up to that. Like we were in really good nick. Everyone knew their roles and their jobs. And it was a tight-knit team. I think, yeah, Goose had us really well drilled. And we were just really excited going in there. Both the backroom staff, you know, like you had the likes of Philip Doyle, who's now with Scotland, and Andy, who's also at Scotland too, and Greg McWilliams, who's now head coach over in New York, and he was the backs coach for the USA men's team the World Cup this year. So we had, like, you know, Brax, the whole shebang, our S&C coach Marion Earls, like, put us through the ringer.
It was a good setup. Like,
it was really good. Yeah. And then everyone,
it was really amateur as well at that time.
Very amateur. Yeah. So we were.
It sounds very pro setup, like. Take ye out of it, like, you know, just having all those facilities was quite.
Well, I think it's when you have the buy-in, then the facilities aren't as important. When everyone is on the same page and has that same desire, you know, getting up at 4:30 to be in UCD to train in the morning, then go to work and then train after work. Yeah, it doesn't sound the most pleasant one. But when you've got another, you know, 30 women doing it with you, it definitely is a lift. And like, when you're having a crap day, they know about it and they get some joking going, and then vice versa, you pick each other up. And then at the end of that end goal is always World Cup. And landing in Marcoussi and preparing was just really good. Like, we had a really tough game in tough weather against the States and won. And then it was kind of like, oh, like, this is the Irish women's team have done really well, but and there was this but, and we kind of, I think I was newish to social media at the time, so I didn't really pay too much attention to it, and we were just excited to kind of get out and play. It was like, we did what we needed to do, all the girls did their job really well. And like, defensively, I think that was probably one of the strongest parts of our game. And so it worked out all right.
When you kind of were going through the groups and then you kind of beat New Zealand and you're in a semi-final, like, are you appreciating it for what it is, or are you so stuck within, like, the tournament mode that you're just kind of staring straight through? Like, you know, like this year, was it Tobin Heath said, you know, oh, it's so funny, like, your body's a temple for 4 years leading up to a World Cup, and then you throw it out a window because you're just going so hard all the time. Is that what it's like at a tournament? Like,
And because the Women's World Cup, there's such a short turnaround.
Yeah.
Like, you, like, having a beer after a game, you're just like, that's a no-go, just in purely just like, that is not going to help my recovery. Like, I need to be like, my rest day is the next day, and then I'm back training, so it doesn't work that way. Like, to be fair though, the girls did say, like, enjoy this and soak it up because this is a big thing. So after the game, like, it was, the atmosphere was brilliant. Like, the fields of Athenry were going 90. The Kiwis couldn't hear their own line-out calls. And I was like, this is bizarre. It's like we're in Ireland, but the weather is amazing. And the bread is better. So we were, after the game, we got showered. And Goose is very understanding. He's kind of like, you know, make sure you've ice on, you've done your recovery, you're getting your fluids into you. And then go out and say hello to the guys that got you through that game as well. So we were able to walk around and say hello to people. And we met, like, Frenchmen that are now still really passionate about the women's game.
Cool.
One man in particular, Yves, he comes to, like, Obelvo. He comes to the Ireland-French matches and he'll stay around afterwards. And he took pictures of all of us celebrating and stuff when we were, like, you know, in our civvies gear. And he made the effort to send them to the IRFU union to make sure that they got to the players, because he was like, oh, you forget in these moments how, like, happy you are. So I still have these pictures of me with, like, random people just, like, absolutely beaming, and it's just a kind little gesture that, like, and you still see him now, like, coming to games and chatting, and
that's very nice.
Really nice. So it's like, no, it was great, and we got to enjoy it that day. And then the next day it was like, okay, we're back to business, Kazakhstan coming up.
Just got to keep going through it. Like,
Because I think if you stop, and your body will just shut down. So we're like, let's keep going. We can celebrate at the end. We've, like, put too much into it.
It's like anything. If you have, like, a busy week of work, you're like, if I actually sit down for 3 seconds, it's game over. Like, I'm not going to be able to get up again. Like, you know, I assume, like, you know, how many days were you, what's the gap for, like, recovery? So, like, you say you play Kazakhstan. What's the, like, gap then? So you train.
So you play Kazakhstan on a Monday, you can kind of have you do your, like, active rehab and your stretching and everything that night. The Tuesday, again, rehab, just to make sure you're staying mobile. For some girls that didn't play as much minutes. They'll be doing like a heavier weight session. If you've got less than maybe 40 minutes, you'll get like a more intense training session, and then you're off for half the day, so you can, like, you're encouraged to go for walks, whatever. We were kind of in the middle of nowhere, so we're near a local village, so you can walk down, have a coffee, and then kind of come back and chill, watch some movies or whatever. And then on the Wednesday, you're pretty much, you know, it's captain's run. So yeah, you do your training, and then, you know, it's a 4-day turnaround, and then you've got a match again. So doing all your video analysis and stuff on your rest days.
Yeah.
So it does fly, and your body is, it's just one big bruise at the end of it. But like during it, you don't.
No,
really,
the adrenaline is keeping you going throughout the whole thing.
And a lot of physios, so it's good.
when you you know, wrapped up your tournament, like when you finished, well, like third, fourth, you were in the third, fourth playoffs. Mm. Like when you went into that game, like, did you expect to like have your highest ever place, or were you just like, listen, we'll just go in for it, it's our last game? Were you treating it as if it was like the final of the World Cup? Like,
yeah, because it's the furthest that we've ever gotten, and yeah, you're playing for Ireland. You want to win every game. Like, yeah, we would have loved to have been in the final, but England were by far the better team, and they deserve to be there. So, like, this is our opportunity. We wanted that bronze medal. Like, it's like chatting to some of the girls afterwards, that game was probably more frustrating to lose than the England game. England game, they were the better team. France were not better than us on that day. We did some silly errors, and it was so frustrating. We should have won. So that's like, I remember afterwards they hand out the medals, and you get like your first and second place medal, and I think you get third, and we got a World Cup participation medal, and it was just...
It's not like the most horrific medal to ever give someone.
Yeah, it wasn't the nicest. I was kind of like, okay. And then when you look back, you're like, listen, you got an amazing opportunity to play in a World Cup. But at the time, it's like, it's definitely a medal that you're not going to look at and be like, yeah, that was a good day.
But I suppose because you were like so new as well, like you kind of, like you didn't live through a lot of the disappointment. So like maybe for a lot of the older girls, they were like, this is not great, but they were like, this is like, we're setting precedents here. Whereas you're like, no, we kind of want to win now.
No, I think everyone was like, well, we want to win. And probably more so the older girls, because like a lot of them, this is their last game in an Ireland jersey. And it was disappointing as well. Like Lynn Cantwell got concussed in the England game. So she wasn't, you know, she didn't have a say so much. She always wanted to, she's saying to me after, she always wanted to start her last game with me and end her last game playing with Fiona Coughlin. And it just didn't really work out that way. But like, such is life, and she still had a pretty good go of things as well.
God, the way you said that, it was like really sad. I was like, oh, let her back.
She still could put on the boots and do the business.
Like, she could still go for it.
Yeah.
You never know what could happen.
100%.
Super sub at the end. You never know what could happen. It'd be like the Stone Cold Steve Austin arriving. We'd have to play the theme music over it, like, and everything.
She'd love that.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Like, I'm thinking like the elbow pads and everything.
We should set that up.
Bald head, yeah.
And
I fully support that.
The leather jacket, just over nothing. Like,
yeah.
Just the sports bra.
Get that image out of my head.
Thanks for listening to part one of my interview with Jenny Murphy, Leinster and Ireland rugby player. Tune in next week where Jenny talks about the hype before the Women's Rugby World Cup that took place in Ireland in 2017 and the aftermath of that World Cup and everything that happened afterwards to her as a player with injury and everything else. Cheerio.
The Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.